This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
On Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
I don't think we're asking the right question. I think the question we should be asking is, do you believe in this thing or not?
The Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley.
What do you mean? Of course martial arts training is relevant.
Now your hosts.
Let me save you some time. Get comfortable.
WSBT Radio's Sean Steyer.
Let's get started.
And former Irish quarterback, Evan Sharpley.
Hey, stay sharp.
He's here, and he is looking snazzier than ever as we start the Leprechaun Lunch on this Friday. It is November. It's hard to believe it's November. Four games left in Notre Dame's season as we run on through. How are we doing today, Mr. Sharpley?
Great.
Looking sharper than ever.
Yeah. Doing the part, looking good.
Yeah, that's right. There's product in the hair. There's no beard. There's no hat.
Freshly shaven this morning.
It's like you're getting ready to go for an inside Notre Dame football.
That's exactly what it is. I had let the beard go maybe one extra week.
Yeah.
It made its debut last week on Inside Notre Dame Football.
And saw that. Gone. And now it is.
It is gone. It may come back. We'll see. Maybe a playoff beard?
Could be.
Notre Dame will have...
Got to get to the playoffs first,
Notre Dame
though, right?
Football is going to have to take care of that. If they do, then I will consider the playoff beard.
Okay. Good to know. And, of course, Notre Dame is at Northwestern tomorrow. It's a 7:15 kickoff Eastern time, and you'll hear it right here on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Covered starting 2 o'clock, Brian Kelly radio show. At 3 o'clock, of course, we've got College Game Day earlier in the day and CBS sports coverage and all that kind of stuff. But 2 o'clock with a local coverage with a Brian Kelly radio show. 3 o'clock, Game Day with Evan Sharpley and Tim Growl here in the studios. And you've got some good guests lined up for tomorrow, it looks like.
We do.
Rick Meyer.
Yeah. Rick will be on the show.
Yep. He will be on the show. His son is a lacrosse player, pretty good lacrosse player.
He is. And he's got a younger son that's a freshman right now in high school,
mm-hmm.
who's like 6'4".
Wow.
He's playing football, though.
How tall are you? Are you right around
6'2"?
6'2"? Okay. Also got former Notre Dame wide receiver, played for the 2012 BCS championship game team, Robbie Toma.
Always a fun guy to talk to.
Yep, one of the Flying Hawaiians from,
that's correct.
from the 2012 team. Former Notre Dame cornerback and player with a 2014 Irish team who played against the Wildcats in 2014, Cody Riggs, who came up here from Florida.
Maybe I won't bring that game up, though, right?
Ooh, man.
Probably not.
Fitzgerald has, he's been a factor in both Northwestern upsets over the Fighting Irish 20-plus years ago as a player and 2014 as the head coach of the Northwestern Wildcats.
This game scares me, Sean.
It should.
Scares me.
It absolutely should.
Now, I'm not saying it's putting the fear of God in me, but it does scare me.
I mean, we've talked on Sportsbeat this week that this is a Northwestern team that plays up or down to its level of competition. They squeaked by Rutgers a couple of weeks ago by a field goal, but they've also knocked off both Michigan State and Wisconsin when those two teams were ranked 20th in the country.
And probably
at the
should
time.
Beat Michigan, too.
Yeah. But then they also, against a 2-6 Nebraska team,
right,
barely beat them. They
lost
beat them by a field
and
goal.
Lost to Akron.
Yep. And so here's Notre Dame.
Any indication then they're going to be playing like the number 3 ranked team in the nation or number 4 ranked team in the nation?
Which we'll get to that in just a second. So anyway, those are your guests on game day tomorrow, of course. Yes. Our game day sports beat starts at 4 o'clock. Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and I. We will go from 4 until 6 o'clock when you pick up the Notre Dame tailgate show with the network and then kick off at 7:15. Then after the game, join Reggie Brooks and I, as always, for the post-game show. Darren Pritchett will stop in, WSBT sports director, after he is done with his TV duties inside Notre Dame football with one, Mr. Evan Sharpley. So we're also taking Leprechaun Lunch on the road later this month, by the way. We have the dates confirmed. Our first road show is going to be Friday, November 23rd. It is the day after Thanksgiving. We will be at Four Winds Casino. You, the listener, have a chance to stop by and join us to get a free gift from WSBT. So,
all right.
Very exciting. So some dates to write down: November 23rd, December 14th, heading into the Crossroads Classic game against Purdue for the basketball team. December 28th, hopefully previewing a college football playoff appearance for the Fighting Irish. If they're in the college football playoff, they would play December 29th, the next day. So one way or the other, regardless of which semifinal they're in, whether it is in Arlington at the Jerry Dome or down in Miami at Hard Rock Stadium, they would be playing December 29th. And then we'll also have shows out there at Four Winds in January, February, and March. So a lot to look forward to. Glad to be taking it out there. And again, we're going to be giving away a cool commemorative gift. So be sure and stop by. I don't know if I've got the authority to go ahead and divulge what that gift is right now.
Let's keep it a secret.
Let's do that. So again, the day after Thanksgiving, when you're out doing your Black Friday shopping or trying to avoid the Black Friday shopping, whichever it may be, you just stop by out there at Four Winds, and there we will be. All right, so let's get into some business here, Evan, because last week Drew Tranquil injured his ankle against Navy, and a Navy player rolled on said ankle, and I've seen some fans. It's been a fairly low percentage, but I've seen some fans blaming this on Navy blocking schemes and all that stuff. I'm sure you've seen the replay of this, right?
Yeah. Stop it.
This had nothing to do with that.
No.
It was just a guy who kind of didn't have good leverage and just sort of fell over and rolled, unfortunately, on Drew Tranquil's ankle.
That's called football.
Yeah, that's right. That happens. Things happen. That's really what it's called, and it happened in the course of the football game. So Tranquil injured his ankle last week against Navy. Still unclear if he's going to play tomorrow. Brian Kelly, on his radio show last night with Jack Nolan at O'Rourke's, gave the full status of Drew Tranquil and his health.
Well, I mean, it still comes off of, you know, understanding the offense and what we're doing. You know.
Oops, that was the wrong cut. Let me see. Right next to that one. Come on. Double click. There we go. It didn't make the switch. Here we go.
You know, I still think he's hobbled a little bit, but he's a guy that can play at 80% and still be effective for us. So we'll see how he feels tomorrow. He got a chance to go in to play some 7-on-7 and a little bit of team. If he feels good tomorrow, that would be a good sign. If he's a little sore, we'll have to reevaluate it. But, you know, nobody else I don't think could come back from the kind of injury that he had in such short notice. So it's good to see him out there.
You know, I almost think we ought to start calling him Wolverine from the X-Men series. He gets injured and then he immediately just grimaces and heals himself right back up.
Well, he has that kind of ability because he takes care of himself. And again, I think most people would still be in a walking boot, but I think he lasted in the walking boot two quarters of the game, got out of the walking boot. Yeah. And it was kind of nice to see him jog out to practice yesterday, go through stretch. And he didn't do much yesterday, but today he was in full pads and moving around pretty good. So we'll see what happens.
You know, obviously, ideally, it would be great not to have to play him Saturday, but this is November. These games are all key, and everybody has to go out there if it's 90, 80%. And when it's Drew Tranquil, 80% of Drew Tranquil
could be pretty good.
Yeah.
So we've got a plan for him. We'll see what happens. Like I said, I think tomorrow is a big day, and we'll talk to the trainers and doctors and see if they feel like he can give us something that's effective. And if he can, we'll play him.
So there you go. Drew Tranquil practiced yesterday, get out there today, and try to go again. The cool weather never helps these kind of injuries, but I mean, they ended up doing okay. Drew White came in, had a good game last week, but Navy is not going to beat Northwestern. Not that Northwestern, you know, is Alabama or whatever, but as you were saying, I mean, this is a game that you have to take very seriously. This is not a pushover game by any means, and Drew Tranquil could help a lot. This is kind of something. I mean, he broke his hand earlier. He's kept on playing with a cast. This has been a concern all season, the depth at this linebacker position, the fact that they don't have guys who are really even close to that level like they had last year with three guys sharing those inside spots.
My dude Drew is playing. Okay. Just count on it right now.
Write it down?
Yeah.
Drew is playing.
If he's Wolverine, you can call me Deadpool, but a high ankle sprain is not going to keep this guy off the field on Saturday.
Well, high ankle sprains are the toughest,
they
though, too.
Are. And when I saw it, I said, if they are taking him in, they think it's either broken or it's a high ankle sprain. Those are the two. And then they came back and said,
X-rays negative.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I said, high ankle sprain. He had the boot on. And I would be just like him, take the boot off. Let me walk around on it. We're going to see how it feels. And you can limit. I mean, this guy's been in the program now for 8 years. So he knows what he's doing. He knows, you know, he's got to be able to get treatment and get some work. And at this point, too, he understands the defense. So the physical reps, I would say, aren't as necessary as just recovering and getting ready. Mentally, he's going to be performing at a high level. So I would be very, very surprised if he didn't play. Very surprised. I mean, we're a win and go home mentality right now.
If he does play, though, do you still kind of limit some of his reps just to try to, or is it like once you go, you go?
I mean, I think adrenaline will take over. Yeah. I think that will be. I mean, maybe take a couple of ibuprofen or something. You'll probably be all right.
Or something.
We're talking about big time college football here. You're undefeated with a chance to play for the college football playoffs. I'm telling you, it would take like a broken leg. Like you would have to take me off of the field to not be a part of this.
If it was the NFL, it'd be go get your Toradol. But yeah, not the NFL.
and being around Drew, you know, that's how he's wired. I mean, it's going to be someone saying no, you can't. You're not allowed to. And I don't think anybody's going to convince him of that either.
I agree. I mean, Esmer Bilal, Jordan Jen Markeith, Drew White, who again came in last week, and Drew White is kind of a nice story himself. He kind of had some injuries early on and has worked his way and found his way in last week. I think pass coverage is still a thing for him, and that's the biggest thing.
I don't think he'll be the first one in.
No, I wouldn't think so either. And when you look at Northwestern's defense, probably going to need a nickel in there anyway, as opposed to as much of a rover. So maybe, you know, Asmer Bilal could be a guy who slides in to play some buck.
I think the high ankle sprain last week to Drew Tranquil happened at a good time. If there is a good time for a guy like Drew White to come in and play.
Yeah.
You know, I think with his skill set, and I like Drew coming out of high school quite a bit, watched some film on him. I think he's got some good upside. You know, he may be a year and a half away from the coverage side and being as versatile as a guy like Drew Tranquil. And that may take cross-training at Rover, cross-training inside, similar to what Drew did. It wasn't a snap of the fingers. I mean, Drew Tranquil, he really revitalized his career when Mike Elko came in and said, hey, I've got this cool position that you can play.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I think there were a lot of question marks on what his role was going to be moving forward within the Irish defense. And snap, now you've got this unique position to really take advantage of his unique skill sets and his versatility. And now he's able to slide into with his IQ and understanding of how the defense works. So I think Drew White could be that guy down the road. I would foresee him. It played really well to his skill set to be against an option team.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's going to be – I don't think – in my mind, he wouldn't be the first guy off the bench if Drew Tranquil doesn't play this week. He wouldn't be – I don't think he's going to be the first guy, whether they're playing nickel or they're in base. I don't think he's going to be the first guy out there. And he may be. I could be completely off base. But I think that there may be a couple of other guys that are getting reps this week to prepare – for a non-option style offense. A
couple other injury updates that Brian Kelly gave after practice last night in his press conference. Kicker Justin Yoon, who missed last week, is 100% groin injury, according to Brian Kelly. So we will see Justin Yoon, and that could be
must
big
have had
in a
him
game
in that
like
zero
tomorrow.
Gravity chamber all
That's
week.
That's right. That's right. Alize Mack, also tight end, unfortunately still in concussion protocol, and he will be out tomorrow. So we'll see what kind of factor that has. And one other guy that Brian Kelly touched on yesterday is Troy Pride Jr., who we saw last week had some obvious issues, especially in the second half. He had the ankle injury, you remember, against Pittsburgh, and Tariq Bracey came in. It was obvious Troy Pride Jr. was not 100%. Well, what, and again, as Jack Nolan referred to, this is November. Guys have to be able to play with some pain because there's a lot on the line right now. Four games to go. You're 8-0, and you're four wins away from playing in the college football playoff for the first time. And what Brian Kelly said about Troy Pride Jr. is, if he's just 90%, he has to give me 100% of 90%. It can't be 75 or 80% of 90%. And like that very first play of the second half kind of typified that. Maybe he couldn't move as well as he needed to. And we saw him kind of try to push Malcolm Perry to a teammate to maybe hope that the teammate was going to, ended up kind of being like a slingshot maybe instead. But he's got to get out there and give everything that he's got if he's going to be on the field, because you're only hurting the team, obviously, if he can't give that.
It's crunch time.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, I get it. You know, from a coaching, I get it. I get it from the player's side, too. You know, it's a grind. It's a long season. You know,
yep.
you put in a lot of work since dating back to the spring of 2018. You've gone through the summer. You've gone through fall camp. You know, there's a lot of time and effort that you put in. I think for some guys, it's important that they look back over that journey and say, okay, I got to dig deep here this last month, because I've got guys counting on me, and we're in a very we're in a great position right now as a team. You know, you don't want to be, they say you're only as good as your weakest link.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're on the field, you don't want to be that weakest link. So, right. You know, look around, understand what the goals are, where you've come from, where you've been, and then lock in. And if you can't do it, then be honest and say, hey, that dude over there needs to be on the field.
Right. And Tariq Bracey, who played a lot in the second half a few weeks ago now, I guess it's been 3 weeks ago against Pittsburgh, he did not make the trip to San Diego, but that was a coach's decision, was how it was listed. He'll be back out there, so we'll see if he becomes a factor this weekend.
That may have been who they're playing to, honestly.
Could have been.
You know,
but
Navy not a lot of, you know, not known for passing quite a bit, and you know, he was in some key passing situations.
Mm-hmm. Which is, again, going to be a lot more of that tomorrow with Clayton Thorson.
Correct.
In the Northwestern offense. Leprechaun Lunch, presented by Sharply Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class. 574-226-8234. Visit sharplytraining.com or search any social media platform for Sharply Training, and you will find them there. We'll get into the college football playoff rankings here in just a second. And also later, we'll preview a little bit of tonight's big sectional championship matchup between Mishawaka and South Bend St. Joseph. Want to be sure on that thought, though, that game is going to be at Mishawaka at Steel Stadium, 7 o'clock kickoff. And want to be sure and let everyone know that the Mishawaka moms, the player moms, are doing a fundraiser for the family of the three kids who were tragically killed just a few days ago down in Tippecanoe Valley. So even if you're not going to the game, you can stop by, drop off a donation for that family. Really, really sad, obviously. Yeah. And so if you get a chance, stop by. If you're going to the game, or even if you're not going to the game, stop by. And the Mishawaka moms are doing a big donation drive for that family down there. All right, college football playoff rankings came out this week for the first time. Evan, Alabama
Every
number
Notre
one.
Notre Dame fan is upset.
Alabama number one. Clemson number two. Those are, of course, 8-0 teams. LSU at 7-1 is number three. And then Notre Dame, 8-0, is number four. So what do you think, Evan? What do you think about the fact that Notre Dame is ranked below LSU and their one loss?
I will say this. Why does it matter? But
which is the most important point.
It is true, but it does give a glimpse into what the committee actually does think of our Fighting Irish.
And I'll tell you what, we'll hit on that in just a second, because there's a lot of different ways you can go with that. And I've got a few different things I'm going to pose to you, probably based on that right there. But first, let's hear the College Football Playoff Committee Chair, Rob Mullins, who's also the athletic director at Oregon, on his comparison between Notre Dame and LSU.
How about the comparison between an undefeated Notre Dame team and a one-loss LSU team? How close was that discussion in the room?
Well, there's a lot of discussion about that, obviously. But when you look at LSU's resume, you know, they got 6 wins against teams above 500 that include quality wins over Georgia and Mississippi State. You know, they got a great resume. Their only loss is a close loss at Florida. So really impressed with their defense. And, you know, overall, their body of work was pretty strong.
So there you go. That is Rob Mullins, the Oregon athletic director. Didn't really touch on Notre Dame, but I agree with what he's saying. I mean, they've got quality wins. I think the biggest one, obviously, being Georgia.
Correct.
Once they won that, that made them a contender once again because they were kind of like that first month or so, like a lot of different teams. Who is this LSU team? Not quite as confounding maybe as Northwestern and figuring them out, but still, what exactly was LSU? And they beat Mississippi State as well. So let's start with this one. Does Notre Dame have any chance to make it into the playoff with one loss?
No.
Zero chance.
I say no.
I mean, I think their only chance is for some of these other teams to end up with 2 losses.
Yes.
But that's their only chance. But if everyone else stays the same, 0 losses.
Well, if you look at who Notre Dame has left on the schedule, I think a loss to one of those teams would be very devastating.
So I guess the follow-up to that would be, is there any of these games, any of these opponents that would be least harmful in terms of Notre Dame being able to get in?
If USC keeps winning?
And that's but the problem with that would be the timing, because it would be the last game
Correct.
Of the season.
It would be.
And it's still going to be a team right around 500, maybe a game or two over 500. At that point, they lost at home for the first time under Clay Helton last
week. I'm going to say any loss is bad.
I think so, too.
I don't know if there's a good if there is a loss on the schedule. I don't think it's I think it would be the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, if USC was even if they were contending to get into the Pac-12 championship game or
and
whatever.
I may be reading too much into this, but by Notre Dame being at 4 here, you know, behind a one loss team. Because Notre Dame has a good resume, too. I mean, it's not like they're... I mean, they beat Stanford, they beat Michigan. I mean, they've got some good wins under their belt, too.
Mm-hmm.
My concern with that is if that's what the committee is already leaning towards, a loss would validate that even more.
Right. Well, and the other thing that you have to remember... A couple of different things. I mean, this is... The college football playoff has not been around for that long. This 5th year of the playoff... Last year, well, the first 4 years of the playoff, the team that started out number 3 in the rankings has not made it. I don't know. It's a trend anyway, however much you can put into that. And the other thing is, last year, Notre Dame with one loss, very similar to LSU, Notre Dame had the one loss at home by 1 point to Georgia early in the season, and they started out number 3. And... there were a couple of unbeaten teams, Wisconsin, one of them that was in the top 10 that was unbeaten. So there were some unbeatens sitting lower, but still not up there in the top 4,
right.
And Notre Dame was ahead of them. So I think the biggest thing to look at is the playoff committee is not just looking at no loss, one loss. They're trying to figure out what is the best team, and I think that is the biggest thing.
I agree with that.
But at the same time, what's interesting now, you've got LSU and Alabama playing tomorrow at the same time as Notre Dame and Northwestern, which stinks for us because we're not going to be able to watch it except for maybe a couple minutes at halftime, depending on timing. But at the same time, Evan, what happened? Alabama's favored to win this game.
By 14.
Yeah, that's right. They're a 2-touchdown favorite.
Against the number 3 ranked team.
There you go. So what do you think? What happens if LSU actually wins that game? Do Alabama and LSU both stay ranked ahead of Notre Dame and Clemson, for that matter? But more importantly, we're talking here about Notre Dame. Do you think they both stay ranked ahead of Notre Dame if LSU wins?
LSU does. They beat Bama.
Well, we know LSU does, but that's the bigger thing. Does Alabama?
I would. Oh, man.
Yes. I've heard some other
I would say yes.
Kind of national guys talking about it. They're seeing this as a cushion for Alabama, essentially.
I don't know. Because
at worst, I think Bama falls to fourth.
Yes.
And maybe maybe Notre Dame moves up a spot to three, depending obviously on what they do.
I could see that, especially with Bama's lack of a resume currently. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're thrashing teams, but they don't have the Georgia win like LSU does. And then LSU would add Alabama and Georgia into that mix, so they'd be your obvious choice. I think they could make an argument, I guess, for one in jumping Clemson, but I don't think that would happen. I think you'd see Clemson slide to one, LSU two, Notre Dame three, Bama four.
Well, and I'm not big into the conspiracy theories or anything, but I've heard some national talking heads this week essentially saying that by having LSU number three, if LSU does beat Alabama, it obviously looks better than number four. It's a little bit better than the number four team beating Alabama. So it gives kind of some cushion there for Alabama by the number three team beating them instead. I think worst case, again, depending on what the score turns out to be and what other outcomes are, I think worst case Alabama would fall to number four if LSU beats them.
Well, if the conversation is trying to find the four best teams,
again,
you're going to be hard pressed to not include Alabama win or loss against LSU.
And traditionally, Alabama-LSU games have been slugfests.
Always good games.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so here is ESPN analyst Kirk Herbstreit with his take on the Fighting Irish.
I think Notre Dame is more of a wild card this year than what they were last year when they still had to go down to Miami and we were all kind of holding our breath to see how that game might go. Other than an upset this week against Northwestern, you look at that schedule and they're going to be heavily favored in every game that they play. So they start to become a real player here and controlling their own destiny. And if we just for now, just as Reese, you know, you do your hypothetical things, if you assume that you have I'm just saying. If we assume that Alabama and Clemson, and if you go with Notre Dame getting in, that eliminates one of the Power Five, another Power Five conference champion. Now you're talking about Washington State up there at number eight. You got Michigan out there as a Big Ten champ. You got the Big 12 with Oklahoma trying to climb up there. It becomes a really big debate down the road if those top three or the four teams that are up there right now with Clemson and Alabama, Notre Dame, if they were to win out, you imagine the race for that last spot and the arguments and the debates of who would get that final spot. Obviously, if Michigan wins out, they would be in the driver's seat. But if they stumbled, then it opens up a big argument for who that fourth spot would be.
Michigan is playing Penn State. By the way, we do our picks every week on Budweiser's weekday sports beat at 5:45. Durham Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and I. And the games we've got to pick this week.
We got some.
I don't know how I'm picking these games.
Try to get that one. Those
it is
ones
insane.
Done right there.
I know. Come I mean, now. Michigan, Penn State, and LSU, Alabama alone. And who's Kentucky playing? Georgia. I mean, come on. But in any case,
yikes.
A couple of different thoughts. I don't think there's any way an unbeaten Notre Dame gets left out of the playoff, even if they're the number four seed. Do you agree with that?
Yep, I'm with that.
But what happens if Notre Dame loses one of these games?
They done.
So regardless,
you can throw some things at me.
Well, I know. If they have one loss and Michigan has one loss,
Michigan gets in.
I have to agree.
Because that will mean that they will have beaten Wisconsin, Michigan State, Penn State, and Ohio State. And then they would have won the Big Ten championship game too.
Yeah. And
so
it'll
Northwestern or whoever is on that side.
Right. And it'll also mean that Notre Dame has lost to a team that they were supposed to beat.
Correct.
So and the distance between now and whenever that upset loss would have been, if they have one loss, and the season opener against Michigan, I know that Notre Dame fans are going to rail on it. They're not going to be happy about it. But, I mean, it's not unprecedented. This is out in 93. Notre Dame beat Florida State. Now, granted, there was not a college football playoff or even a BCS at that point, but they beat Florida State, but then turned around and lost to Boston College, and Florida State ended up playing for them, winning a national championship.
How about this one right here for you?
Notre Dame was playing in the Cotton Bowl.
How about this one right here? Let's say Notre Dame is in the ACC.
Okay.
They lose one of these remaining games.
But then get a chance to...
And they play in the ACC championship game against whoever's on the other side, whether mm-hmm. it's Clemson, whomever it is. Would they get in then?
If you had a chance to come back... First, you've got to be... Champion. First, what division are Correct. You going okay. to be in?
Yeah, there's certainly some moving parts.
Yeah.
But let's say, for argument's sake, that you are then the conference champ with one loss. I think it would be more appealing.
Yeah, but... Although
the committee hasn't really said that a conference champion with one loss is going to necessarily get in.
Right. But, I mean, as you look at schedules, we're also going to see, and that's the thing that they're trying to address in their future schedules, with teams like Alabama being added, Wisconsin being added, obviously Michigan. I mean, next year they play both Michigan and Georgia.
I want the opposite.
And both of them are going to be on the road.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
play Stanford on the road.
Exactly. And they'll have USC.
Their schedule is terrible next year.
Yeah. And I mean, and again, when you go back and look at what this schedule has become, you can't help what your opponents are going to be.
That
it's not
true.
Like they haven't tried to schedule up. USC
schedule
and Stanford are always going to be there.
Years, 5 years ahead, too. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You have Arkansas in 2 years, correct?
Right.
And right now you would say, well, that doesn't sound like a very strong SEC team.
But Florida State on the schedule 4 years ago looked a lot different than what it looks like right now.
No doubt about that.
And Clemson's going to rotate on. Who knows what Clemson's going to be? Right now they're a power playing in the playoff and national championship games every year, but who knows what they're going to be when they rotate back on. So, I mean, they'll still see some of those ACC powers, but you're right. I mean, that those championship games are a last impression, or a last chance to try to make that last impression mm-hmm. before the selections are made, which is why the Big 12, even though they don't even have 12 teams or divisions, why they added that championship game to try to give their team or their conference a true champion and try to give that true champion a chance. But there's still a chance by playing those extra games that you can get knocked out. And the other side of it, too, is Alabama and Ohio State have both had seasons in which they didn't even play for their conference championship and still made the playoff and, by the way, won the national championship. So, I mean...
18 playoff.
You know, yeah. It's all just a swirling... None of this gives you an absolute. There's always going to be some chances, regardless of if you're in a conference or not, or playing in a conference championship.
Well, gives us a ton of stuff to talk about, that's for sure.
This is true. We'll talk about, is Notre Dame going to... make this November push this time. They've struggled in the last few years. Are they more prepared for November this time around? You'll hear Brian Kelly's thoughts on that and Evan Sharpley's thoughts on that as well when we return with the Leprechaun Lunch. First, some sponsors, though, were presented by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, by Lechleitner Door, call 295-6311, by McCree's Italian Bakery for your tailgating needs, Carmela's at McCree's for your post-game dining, Kurt Outdoor Living, Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, Beef O'Brady's of Granger, and Edward Jones. Contact Matt Wilson in South Bend or Pablo Rodriguez in Granger. We're with former Irish quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. We continue with the Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, along with former Notre Dame quarterback and baseball player Evan Sharpley. I'm Sean Stiers. It is 12:37. We've got a preview of tonight's Mishawaka St. Joe sectional championship game coming up. You'll hear it here on 96.1 WSBT. And also, the Mishawaka Network has an online stream. They use our broadcast and hook up with their video and the whole thing. And if you go to cavemansports.com, you'll be able to find that video tonight. Okay, Evan, it is Notre Dame against Northwestern tomorrow, 7:15 Eastern time kickoff. And the calendar has switched over to November. The Irish just 8-12 in the month of November since 2013. They were undefeated in the month of November in that 2012 BCS championship game season, just 8-12. Since then. So some things maybe that you've seen, is it simply about the teams just weren't good enough to be good in November? Do you think that this team is good enough to go in November and get the job done?
Yes, I think there's a number of things at play with that. The schedule is favorable. at least now, looking at the opponents. Granted, no game is going to be an easy game. I think that that plays, you know, as part of the towards the strengths of them winning the remaining four games. I like where they are. I think physically, the bye week happened at a good time. They're able to refocus, re-energize, you know, get some of those bumps and bruises figured out.
Mm-hmm.
The strength and conditioning program, we're talking now a couple years in. I think that that's going to pay some dividends. All of the things as far as sleep, GPS tracking, I think that that's all rocking and rolling now at this point. So they should have a pretty good idea.
We talked about it last week. They spent the night in San Diego last week. Didn't get back until around 4 in the afternoon instead of getting back at 5 or 6 in the morning after that game on the West Coast. And it's interesting because Brian Kelly mentioned last night that last year you said GPS and the players have these trackers and they can do a lot of different things with them from their activity and also the speed that they get up to on the field. And Brian Kelly said that last year at this time, 11 different players were able to hit 19 miles per hour or better on the GPS. They've got about double that this time. So,
do you think we could give that a whirl? I wonder how fast we can get up there.
I'm sure you'd like. My guess is yours would be a lot faster than mine. Well, and that's it. It's hard to gauge. This is kind of like when analytics was new. I remember when our old buddy Pete LaFleur in Notre Dame baseball, when right after Moneyball came out, he started including OPS. And OPS is obviously slugging percentage plus on-base percentage. And combined, mm-hmm. it's just OPS. But I remember when it first came out, it's like you couldn't just say OPS. You had to explain to people what OPS meant because nobody was using it. So now, like when Brian Kelly talks about 19 miles an hour on the GPS, well, what's the comparison? It's hard to really know exactly what that means because we really have no point of reference on it.
That's pretty fast, though. He's fast.
A human being 19 miles per hour, yes, that is fast. And so in any case, so Brian Kelly talked about earlier this week why the month of November will be different for the Fighting Irish.
I think our focus, a lot of those guys went through it last year. So they know the things that we can't do. So I think it's much more about having a football team that's experienced it, been through it, and wants to get on the other side of it. They have a process that they know has gotten them here. You know, they've won 18 games over the last 2 years and lost 3. So they know the process works. They've got 4 weeks. So I think they feel like if we just stay committed to our process, if we stay humble, if we really work on our recovery and be prepared for the next guy to step in, then they'll be fine. So I just think that just the knowledge of going through it and having it in front of us before and not finishing it the right way has been a great impetus for all the guys.
The Irish were 2-2 in November last year with the two devastating losses ultimately being to Miami and Stanford. So do you think that especially year two of the Bayless conditioning program that we're going to see a lot different effects this time around?
He admitted it would probably take 2 years at least.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's a pretty fair assessment when you're implementing a program like that, when it's a year-round type of approach. You know, you're looking at multifacets, you're looking at nutrition, you're looking at sleep, you know, different recovery tactics, the obvious parts of the strength, the conditioning, the speed and agility development, all of those things. You know, it isn't just like a snap of the fingers. Now, granted, because they were underconditioned prior to him getting there, I know a lot of athletes within the first 4 to 6 months saw some huge increases,
mm-hmm.
But he was very open and honest in saying this isn't
they're
a short-term play.
Making, yeah.
Yes, it's going to be a continued piece of development. And you know, I think for me, you're seeing the speed increase. The 19 miles an hour for me, that's not very impressive. And the reason why I say that is that's straight line speed, which is good. But if you watch a football game, I mean, how quickly can you get up the field, say 5 yards, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
but if you can't run enough straight, if you can't run fast in a straight line, you're not going to be able to do it coming off.
I disagree.
There are
guys that I've seen straight line, not very fast, but they're also in anticipation.
Yeah, there are also people who are quicker lateral, out of blocks.
Yep, side to side, lateral, those things too. So I think that those stats are fun and good to track because it gives you an indication on, is this person becoming more explosive? Is this person getting faster? And, you know, that may be all we're privy to. I'm sure that they're looking at lateral movement. They're looking at those types of things, reaction time, all of that based on the GPS data they're given. So I think that now in this second full year, I think you're going to see a different team physically. And we saw that early on in some fourth quarters too.
Yeah.
They were still strong.
Well, and I think that this team, the conditioning is a part of it, but I also think that this defense specifically is better than last year's defense, better than any defense they've had at least since 2012, maybe better than 2012's. And the offense is also more multidimensional. It's not just a pounded at you run offense. They're more diverse this time around. So the combination of those two things along with the conditioning piece, I just think this year's team is, even though there are still some questions, whether it's in the offensive line, which looked better last week, but again, it's Navy, so you know they're going to have to prove it against what's going to be a good front seven tomorrow. But I think that all in all, as a whole team, that this year's team is a couple steps ahead of last year's team.
Wholeheartedly agree with you.
But now we've got to see that. And also, again, Miami and Stanford. I don't know if Northwestern and USC and Syracuse are counterparts to those teams.
Also fair.
But we'll see.
Also fair.
That's right. All right, let's take a timeout. I want you to give some time to Ian Book and his rise and Brian Kelly earlier this week. Got to ask him, was there a light bulb moment where things really came together for Ian Book? He talked about how he's always been an accurate passer, but it was the knowledge in the offense. Those two things had to meet up, and they finally met up here just recently, really. So we'll let you hear some of that and get some of Mr. Sharpley's response to that as well. Leprechaun Lunch, Sean and Sharpley, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Well, I mean, it still comes off of, you know, understanding the offense and what we're doing. You know, we had a couple of situations, and going back to what we were talking about, we had a couple of run plays on where it was cover zero, and there was one-on-one on the outside with Miles Boykin, and he throws a fade. That's a 3-foot putt for him. You know, that's a vertical throw that ends up being a 20-yard catch when a run play was actually called along with the pass play. So his ability to understand the nuances of the offense and you then gaining a advantage tactically allows for high completion percentage. He knows where the leverage points are within the offense that gives you an advantage against the defense.
That's Brian Kelly talking about Ian Book, who leads the nation in completion percentage at 76.5%. He is seventh in the nation in pass efficiency, seventh in the nation pass efficiency offense. Pretty amazing rise, obviously, Evan, for Ian Book and what we've seen from him over these last four games now.
Yeah, he's done a really nice job of, you know, putting a little sense of urgency into this offense. He gets the ball out quickly. You know, he's making decisive reads. You know, he's working through his progressions. He's able to extend some plays with his feet. He's smart with the ball. He's got a couple of throws I know he'd like back. I think two specifically that I recall, I don't think he saw the defender. And that's one of those things that he'll continue to get better at. But when you're completing the percentage that he is, well, why don't we just take those interceptions and toss those into the completion percentage too? Because somebody caught him.
That's right.
He obviously,
the ball's never on the ground.
He
right?
obviously throws a great spiral and a very catchable football if someone's catching it. So when we do that, he might be up over 80% if you include a couple of those interceptions. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody could have predicted this. I think that ability was there. Certainly what Brian Kelly touched on, the mental side is huge. And, you know, now in year three, for me personally, and some guys are a little bit different, it takes longer than others. Some pick it up fairly quickly depending on the type of offense that they run in high school, or who they maybe are groomed by growing up, whether it's, you know, growing up in a household where a dad is a coach, or that's kind of what you've been immersed in. So it makes sense that it's taken a couple of years. For me personally, you know, by my junior year, I had a really good feel for what the offense was supposed to look like, the checks I could make, almost kind of like a puppeteer. Like I knew the strings to pull when I needed them, versus the first couple of years, you're so worried about just calling the play right, walking up, you're not focusing so much on maybe your physical abilities. So to me, it's to the point now where it's second nature. You know, he's processing the information, and now being QB1 for, you know, X amount of weeks, is he's getting more reps in practice. He's getting more game reps. I think his confidence is only going to continue to grow, just based on being on the field as the guy, mm-hmm. versus being a backup in a different role.
So Brian Kelly, he made those comments on Tuesday at his press conference, and in another bite he talked about again how the knowledge of the offense and his accuracy that he's already had have come together. And so, I mean, we've all kind of been sitting here going, when did everything click for Ian Book? When did it happen? Because in the spring, he was still far from a finished product. So I asked Brian Kelly.
Well, obviously it clicked the week he started, right?
Exactly, right?
He had never done that before.
So I asked him, when was the light bulb? Was there a light bulb moment for Ian Book?
You know, he made some mistakes like every quarterback does, and he stopped making them. You know, you think that, you're hoping that just your consistency and approach in terms of teaching, and then, you know, his understanding of the offense. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, we read the backside safety against our defense. When he drops down, we throw a backside slant, right? He kept handing the ball off in spring ball, and that safety kept making the play. And it just was like, can't you see him? We need to throw that slant. And then in the spring game, he threw it three times. So, you know, it's just that process, that repetitive process of sticking with it. And he just, you know, made that mistake 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and you keep scratching your head. Is he going to get it? Is he going to get it? And then he sees it clearly, understands it, clicks. So I think it's just the repetitiveness of the teaching and going through it, and he saw it, understands it now, and it's allowed him to run the offense effectively.
And I mean, I think it's like that for everybody, right? That's why we talk about, like, that's a mistake that, like, when we're watching practice, we don't realize maybe what a mistake.
Because you don't know what the play is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's something that he wasn't doing. So like, just sitting there watching it, it doesn't look like a mistake, but it's a mistake within the offense that all of a sudden it started working. And Brian Kelly said in the spring game he made that throw three times.
That's because he's a gamer.
That's right.
He just needed a bigger moment for it to be like, oh yeah, there is a safety walking down in the box. I should throw a slant.
You're a little more sarcastic than usual today.
I'm hungry. Beef O'Brady's needs to drop
eat a Snickers
off.
Sharply.
Okay.
Halloween was this week.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. That was Superman.
So in any case, were you?
Yeah.
I'm at dun dun dun. So Drew Tranquil is Wolverine and Evan Sharpley is
Deadpool.
Superman.
I'm Deadpool.
I never saw the sequel. I've got to see that still.
Yeah.
All right. We're running out of time here. I'll remind you we're presented, of course, by Sharply Training. Go to sharplytraining.com. Also, search any of their social media platforms. Search Sharply Training and you will find them. Also brought to you by Lechleitner Door, by Carmella's at McCree's, by Zolman's Tire and Auto Care, by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, Sean Stevens in South Bend, Bob Borlick in Walkerton, by Kurt Outdoor Living, and by Beef O'Brady's of Granger as well. So don't forget, we've got the big matchup tonight with
Mishawaka and South Bend St. Joseph over at Steel Stadium sectional championship game. So should be a good one. It was one of the most fun Mishawaka games we did all year. It came right down to the wire. The first time decided by just 2 points and a missed 42-yard field goal with about 18 seconds left was what it came down to. So a lot of fun. Should see the ball in the air for one team and the option for the other team. Chris Harness broke both the single season and all-time career rushing records last week in Mishawaka's victory. And what I thought was cool, both of those records he broke on long touchdown runs. So that was kind of a cool way to do it, I thought.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. So, and also, again, the Mishawaka moms are doing the fundraiser for the family of the three siblings who were tragically killed down in Tippecanoe Valley last week. So come on out. Even if you're not going to the game, you can help them with that. We've got a little more than 30 seconds. The question of the week, Evan, what is the one word you would use to describe the Fighting Irish right now?
I would say, like the kids say, they say loading with like the dot, dot, dot.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of waiting to see right now.
Waiting to see. That's more than one word.
I know.
But
loading, dot, dot, dot.
Loading, dot, yes. dot, dot. Okay. As opposed to this, dot, dot, dot. Yeah. Loading, dot, yeah, dot, dot.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Have a good weekend. Good show tomorrow. I'll talk to you next
week.
All right. Thanks, Evan Sharpley. Sean Steiners, Leprechaun Lunch, 96.1 WSBT South Bend, the sports leader.